May I enter into the eternal divine order of God to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in the same manner may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires, and may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit, and infuse in me true light, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. I want to begin with November 2nd, 1926. And here you can see that the heading is Hiding One's Acts in the Acts of Our Blessed Mother and how they stand in for her. Very special message. So Louisa said, I continued my living in the divine fiat, and while doing my acts in it, I absorbed light. Now God is light, so that's 1 John 1:5. And as it formed its reflections, as many threads of light came out, which formed a net of light that extended over the earth. Now this has all been explained in earlier messages, both in this volume and in earlier ones, that our acts in the divine will are threads of light, and they make this wonderful net of light which extends over all the earth in order to catch souls. I don't use the creatures. And Jesus, moving in my interior, told me, my daughter, every time you go around in my will, you take more light, because that's what the divine will is. God is light. You take more light in order to form the net in which you can catch souls. So here is the idea of being a missionary and a fisherman of souls, as Jesus told the apostles they would be. And we do it through our acts in the divine will, reaching out to all souls, past, present, and future. And do you know what this net is? Jesus said, it is my knowledge. So God's fishing net for us is the knowledge that he actually reveals of the divine will. The more knowledge I manifest to you about the eternal fiat, he said, the more I dispose and expand the net in order to catch the souls that must live in my kingdom. Now notice that my interpretation of creatures, two lines before that, is given here, that we're talking about souls. So Jesus said he expands his net in order to catch the souls who must live in the divine will. And this disposes the Lord to give them to you, because Louisa is the one who has been called to open the kingdom of the divine will. When you go around in our will, by virtue of the divine will, your acts become light, and they extend so much as to touch even the divinity and to draw more light of truth into the midst of creatures. Now there you can say into the midst of creatures, because you're talking about the whole of humanity. Okay. The fishing net that the Lord uses to catch us and to bring us into the divine will is the knowledge that has been revealed to us through Louisa. And then we cooperate in expanding this net by using our acts in the divine will and adding more threads of light to this wonderful net to catch more. In the next paragraph, then, we're talking about our Blessed Mother and joining our prayers with her in the divine will. So Louisa says, while I continued my round in everything that has been done in the supreme will, I arrived at everything that our celestial mother has done in the divine will. And I said to her, Sovereign Queen, I come to hide my little love in the great sea of your love. This is a very, very good idea. So we put the little drop of water in the great sea, and it is much more acceptable to God. I put my adoration towards God in the immense ocean of yours. Louisa is actually showing us how we can have more clout with God, how our prayers can be much more valuable in the eyes of God. So if we put ours into the immense ocean of our Blessed Mother's prayers and adoration, they have much greater value. So she said, I hide my thanksgiving in the sea of yours. I hide my supplications, my sighs, my tears, my pains in the sea of yours, so that my sea of love and yours may be one. Therefore, you become identified, of course, as one of her special daughters or sons. So I hide my adoration. So my adoration and yours may be one. My thanksgiving, all of those plural words are a transliteration from the Italian. They're not English. So I hide my thanksgiving so that it may acquire vastness in your expanse. So as I said, this is putting a greater value on anything that we're doing by simply uniting it with what our Blessed Mother has done. And so it has much, much greater clout and value in the eyes of God. So she said, I put my supplications and my tears and my pains so that they become one single sea with yours, so that I too may have my seas of love and adoration, etc. In other words, mine will actually expand being in Blessed Mother's seas of love and adoration and so on. And just as your sovereign height impetrated with this, the longed for Redeemer. Now, the way that expression is used makes practically no sense in English, the sovereign height. The translator is not really getting what Louisa is saying. Louisa is trying to say that since our Blessed Mother is the greatest prodigy that God has ever made, joining that makes huge difference, an immeasurable distance and difference to us. So she said, I too may present myself before the Divine Majesty with all of these seas in order to ask and to beseech and to implore the kingdom of the Supreme Fiat. She said, with your extraordinary holiness, your extraordinary union with God, and with you being our tainted nature's solitary boast, as the poet said, if I join that, then my intercessions for the coming of the kingdom of the divine will have much, much greater clout with God. So I must use your life and your seas of love and graces to conquer the divine will and to make it concede its kingdom upon earth, just as you conquered the divine will to let the eternal word descend. So Louisa is understanding that to enter into all the intercession of Blessed Mother is to make our prayers completely different in the eyes of God. So she said, don't you want to help your little daughter to give me your seas and so on? Of course she does. So in the next paragraph then, we have a mother and daughter paragraph. First of all, our Blessed Mother did all this intercession for the coming of the longed for Redeemer. And then Louisa has to do it for the coming of the kingdom of the divine will. And the mother prepares for the daughter, and then the daughter joins the mother. And we have an illustration here of what I call the mother and daughter mystery. And that is that the mother takes care of the daughter in her infancy, and the daughter takes care of the mother in her old age. So it's just simply different eras we're talking about. While I was doing this, Louisa said, I thought to myself, my celestial mother didn't occupy herself, nor did she have any great interest in the kingdom of the Supreme Fiat, that it might come soon to reign upon the earth. Now, she's not actually right in saying that. And what you have is that Louisa is not thinking of all that has been said to us before now, because Jesus has explained absolutely that the divine will and the completion of God's will upon the earth was the primary purpose of redemption. It's all been explained before, but When Louisa comes to do a meditation, she's not sort of going into her memory looking for all that has been said before. She's giving an immediate response. And this is just an immediate response. She's saying she hadn't any interest. She only had an interest in the longed for Redeemer, and she obtained him. But as for the divine fiat, which was more necessary and which was to put perfect order between the Creator and the creature, she didn't occupy herself with that. She did. But Louisa's not thinking about that right now. While it was up to her, as queen and mother, to reconcile the human will with the divine, so that the divine might reign with all its triumph. At that moment, when she doesn't really get it right, Jesus pops up instantly to correct it. My beloved Jesus came from within my interior, all goodness, and he said to me, my daughter, the mission of my inseparable mother was for the longed for Redeemer. That was her mission. That was what she had to carry out. And she fulfilled it perfectly. However, you must know that everything that both she and I did, its substance, its source and primary cause, was the kingdom of the divine will. That's been explained many times up to now. But since redemption was necessary, redemption had to come first, so she had to give her attention to that. But since redemption was necessary in order for this to come about through the kingdom of the fiat, though the kingdom of the fiat was inside of our acts, on the outside we were all intent and occupied on the redemption. He was saying that if you're looking at our external actions, yeah, everything was for redemption. But if you look at us internally, the divine will was resident in both of them. So how could they not have had the divine will as the primary act in absolutely everything they did? It's just that Louisa wasn't thinking that way. So on the inside, everything was divine will. On the other hand, your mission is exclusively the kingdom of the divine will, because redemption has already happened. And everything that the sovereign queen and I did is at your disposal. They have prepared the way. It's given to help you, to stand in for you, and to give you access to the divine majesty in order to impetrate and ask. In other words, Louisa couldn't do what she's doing if our Blessed Mother and Jesus hadn't done what they did. If redemption hadn't happened, we couldn't be here at this point of interceding for the coming of the kingdom of the divine will. So this was to give you access to ask incessantly for the coming of the kingdom of the eternal fiat. In order for you to receive the good of the longed for Redeemer, you should have done your part. But since you weren't even there, you weren't created at that point, my mother stood in for you, and she has stood in for absolutely everybody. Now you must stand in for her, because you're looking at different epochs of time. And if you go back to the epoch of the redemption, yes, she was the primary person that God used beyond his son. Now, if you go forward into the epoch of the coming of the kingdom of the divine will, Blessed Mother's work is done, and it's Louisa's turn. Now you must stand in for her in her part. She stood in for you in redemption. You stand in for her in the kingdom of my will. I find that fascinating. The mother stood in for the daughter, and the daughter stands in for the mother. They're all part of the same mystery. More so, since the Queen of Heaven was the first daughter of my will. Now, the first daughter means she was the very first person to live the divine will from conception to death. The very first. And because she always lived within our expanse, she formed her own seas of love and grace and adoration and light, because she was living in the divine will. Now you are the second daughter of my will. Now there's a difference between the first and the second, because the first daughter of the divine will lived the divine will from the first instant of her conception. The second daughter of the divine will had to wait until Jesus had brought her through the long journey into her triple union with God and huge purification, and that he had to bring her to the place where he actually began revealing this to her. And it was only at the point where she surrendered her will finally to God that she becomes the second daughter of the divine will. So there's a massive difference between our Blessed Mother and Louisa. But now that both are in the divine will, what is hers is yours, because there's only one divine will. Because your mother keeps you as a birth from herself. Why is that? Because it's the divine will who's doing everything. And she enjoys that her daughter be inside of her own seas. Okay? So that Louisa is actually living the divine will united with our Blessed Mother at a very deep level. And it's very interesting that in the hours of the Passion and in all of Louisa's prayers, she always brings our Blessed Mother into it, that she wants to be part of it. So that the Blessed Mother enjoys that her daughter be inside her own seas in order to impetrate the so longed for kingdom of the divine fiat, so that Louisa's prayers are enhanced by the prayers of our Blessed Mother. Therefore, see how abundantly your mother makes up for you, because it brings your own prayer and intercession to a completely new dimension, because she's giving you all that is hers. Even more, she feels honored that her immense seas will serve you to impetrate a kingdom so holy. So you'll see, therefore, that Jesus is saying that our Blessed Mother is fully involved in the bringing of the kingdom of the divine fiat. And she's working particularly through Louisa at this particular point. But of course, later on, she'll work through all of us who want to join her. And after this, sometimes with these very long messages, you find Louisa going on to different topics. So we're going into a new paragraph in which Jesus is going to explain paradise regained for us. So after this, she said, I was following in the divine will what Jesus had done in redemption. And my sweet Jesus came back and said, my daughter, my redemption came as a remedy for man. You see, it had to be first. You couldn't have the kingdom of the divine fiat before this. Therefore, it serves as a remedy, as medicine, as food for the sick and for the blind and for the mute and all the other maladies. So if we're not healed of all the things that are making us sick and blind, and mute means unable to either speak the word of God or pray, and all the other maladies that actually cripple our souls, if we're not released from that, we're not ready to enter into the divine will at all. So all of that is absolutely essential. So because people are sick, they do not enjoy or receive all the strength of the remedies that I came to bring them. Now, because they're in an unhealed condition, they're not even benefiting from the fullness of what is available. You can see that all around you in the church. You can see people, the way I put it is that they've got problems to sell. And yet they can be going to church. They can be receiving the sacraments. And yet they don't seem to be able to enter in and allow these sacraments to bring them life. I have testified a number of times in my life that I have received more healing through the sacrament of reconciliation than anything else, where you bring your genuine maladies to the Lord and you allow him to actually release you. You allow him to raise you from the dead, so that from being sick, you become a very healthy person. But you have to allow the sacrament to actually do it. And so what Jesus is saying here is that many of them are so sick spiritually that they're not actually able to receive the help. The Eucharistic sacrament, Holy Communion, which I left as food in order to give them perfect health, he said, many eat it over and over again and remain always sick. So that's like a person very sick in the body, and the food they're taking is doing them no good. Poor food of my very life, he said, hidden under the veils and the accidents of bread, but it's reaching corrupted palates. Now, this is very, very important. A corrupted palate for Jesus is that the person only comes with worldly tastes, or tastes for self-indulgence, tastes for sin, a corrupted palate, and therefore they cannot deal with Holy Communion at all. How many undigesting stomachs, they can't take it. This is the tragedy that we're seeing all around us today. And these undigesting stomachs prevent them from enjoying the taste of my food and from digesting all the strength of my sacramental life. So here the moral and spiritual sickness of the human race. And it's only illustrated in people in the church how they cannot actually benefit from the wonderful remedies that the Lord has provided for us in the sacraments. It's really, really very sad. And so he said they remain infirm. And because they are members, feverish in evil. Now, the way we would put that in English is that they are unrepentant. They have no appetite for what Jesus has offered. All of us would know people that you couldn't possibly give very spiritual food like we're feeding from right now to people. We all know people you couldn't do that to. Jesus said, this is why I long so much for the coming of the kingdom of the supreme fiat, because then everything I did in coming upon the earth will all serve as food. So you will know that you are living in the divine will if all the remedies of redemption are actually doing you good. They will serve so that people can actually enjoy perfect health. Now, this perfect health is first of all in the soul, secondly in the mind, thirdly in the body. What is not the difference between a sick person who takes the same food and someone who enjoys perfect health? The infirm one takes it without appetite and without taste, and it serves him only to sustain him so that he doesn't die. And the healthy one takes it with appetite because he enjoys it and he takes more and he preserves himself strong and healthy. See the different ways of actually dealing with food. So what will not be my contentment in seeing that in the kingdom of my will, everything I did will serve no longer as food for the sick, but as food for the children of my kingdom. Now, the children of my kingdom is Romans 8:19, that the whole earth is waiting for these special children of the kingdom of God. These children will be all full of vigor and in perfect health. Even more, by possessing my will, they will possess my permanent life within them. Now, to possess the divine will is to have God actually living within you. If I can use very Catholic language, the real presence. And if God is actually living in us as permanent life for this life as well as forever, then, of course, you will, in fact, have health of mind and heart and body. But you have to be at the stage of possessing the divine will. And this is the way the blessed in heaven possess the divine will. So, my will be the veil that will hide my life in them. Now, the divine will acts just as the host acts. The little accidents of bread hide the divine presence, but the divine presence is actually there. And so Jesus is saying, if the divine will is living and working and dominating and ruling in you, in other words, you possess the divine will, then you become a living host. My will be the veil that will hide my life in them. And just as the blessed possess me within themselves as their own life, because true happiness has its origin inside the soul. Now, what do you call paradise? Paradise was when the human race were in union with God. And they knew nothing about sin, they knew nothing about selfishness, they knew nothing about disintegration or darkness or evil or anything else. And when we come back to our origin in the divine will, paradise is regained in ourselves, inside of us. Happiness is inside of you. Nobody outside of you can make you happy. Happiness is in the soul. Jesus said, the kingdom of God is within you. That is Luke 17:21. Because true happiness has its origin inside the soul. And so the happiness which they receive continuously from the divinity dwelling within them holds hands and exchanges the kiss. That's a very, very awkward language. In English, we don't say that. We say unites with the happiness which they possess inside. And so they're fully happy. We have this happiness because we've gone back to our origin. We've gone back to the place that God intends for us. And since God is feeding us and he's the source of all happiness, he's the source of the beatitude of everyone in heaven, since God is the source of happiness and since he is feeding us all the time, then we are fully happy on this earth. Now, the difference between being fully happy on the earth and being fully happy in heaven is that in heaven there's no suffering. And on earth, we still have the cross. We still must carry the cross. In the same way, the soul who possesses my will have my perennial life within her, which will serve her as continuous food. Now, when we receive Holy Communion at Mass, that sacramental species only stays 15 minutes. That has been attested to by the Church. But when you have the divine will resident in you and you possess the divine will, you have the continuous presence of the Lord, 24/7, 365, for the whole of your life. So it's not once a day like the food of the sacramental life. In fact, my will make a greater display, nor will it be content by giving itself once a day. It will give itself continuously because it knows that these souls have pure palates. A pure palate now and a strong stomach means that you have been purified by the Lord of the selfishness and the worldliness and the sinfulness and everything else. You cannot be in possession of the divine will and have sin in your soul. They're two different kingdoms entirely. So the pure palates then, they're able to really not only appreciate this food, but actually get the greatest benefit from it. And they've strong stomachs to be able to digest, not just once a day, but at every single moment. They're able to take the strength and the light of the divine will. Now, we're watching this in Louisa in every single message that we're dealing with here in volume 20. She has the pure palate, the strong stomach. She's able to take what the Lord is actually giving to her. And the sacraments and my sacramental life, that's Holy Communion, will serve as food, as delight and new happiness for the life of the supreme fiat, which they will possess. And so the person will grow more and more and more in happiness. Now, this delight and this happiness is expressed well in Psalm 36, verse 8. They will feast in the abundance of your house, Lord, and you give them drink from the river of your delights. For with you is the fountain of life, and in your light we see light. That's Psalm 36, verses 8 and 9. That's what he's talking about here. So, since this is so, someone living in the divine will, someone actually possessing the divine will, is experiencing what St. Paul speaks about in Galatians 5:22, love, joy, and peace. The great signs that you really are in the kingdom of God. And if someone living in the divine will doesn't have joy in the depths of their being, you have to ask, are they really in the divine will? So, the kingdom of my will be the true echo of the celestial fatherland, in which, while the blessed possess their God as their own life, they receive him into themselves also from the outside. So, inside and outside of themselves, divine life they possess and divine life they receive. The way we would say that is they possess the divine life and they also receive divine life. What will not be my happiness in giving myself sacramentally to the children of the eternal fiat and finding my own life there? That's why he can stay in a perennial way. Then will my sacramental life have its complete fruit. In other words, exactly what Jesus wanted to give when he created the Eucharist will be given to us. And as the species are consumed, I will no longer have the sorrow of leaving my children without the food of my continuous life, because my will, more than sacramental accidents, will maintain its divine life always and its full possession. In the kingdom of my will, there will be neither foods nor communions that are interrupted. It's perennial, it's continuous. Every nanosecond of our lives, it will not be interrupted. It's perennial. And everything I did in redemption will serve no longer as remedy, but as delight, as joy, as happiness, and as beauty ever growing. So the triumph of the supreme fiat will give complete fruit to the kingdom of the divine will. Now, I have a whole dose of references for anyone who's interested in going and seeing that this expresses the scriptures very, very well. First of all, I want to give you the joy. Nehemiah 8:10 says that the joy of the Lord is my strength. So people in the divine will have this inner strength. And if they are called to lay down their life for the Lord, they will be able to do it because the Lord is actually with them, giving them this wonderful strength. I also want to give you Psalm 28, verse 7, Psalm 73, verse 26, Isaiah 12, verse 2, Isaiah 40, verse 31, Exodus 15, 2, and Zephaniah 3, 17. That's all for the joy of the Lord is my strength. Bringing this thing into absolute beauty, the beauty of holiness. 1 Peter 1, 8 to 9, Habakkuk 3, 19, John 15, 11. I also want to give you Psalm 16, verse 11, and Psalm 28, verses 7 to 8. I couldn't go through them all. I'd be here all night. But for any of you who are interested in the scriptures, you have quite a little nest of beauty there if you go into the scriptures. Okay, so let's go into November the 3rd, 1926. We have something very interesting considering that it is November. Jesus is talking about the holy souls in purgatory. And Louisa wants to know something that I think is absolutely fascinating. Do they all benefit from the prayers and the suffrages that are sent to them? The answer is actually no. So it's going to be very, very interesting. So Louisa said, I continue to live all abandoned in the adorable will. And while I was praying, I thought to myself, how I would like to descend into the prisons of the purging souls. Now go to the next paragraph for a moment and the second line where Jesus said that, sorry, in the third line, that you actually ascend to purgatory. Do you see it? You ascend to purgatory. Whereas Louisa starts in the first paragraph saying that she wants to descend into purgatory. I just want to show you that the Lord takes a different approach to us. So Louisa in the first paragraph says, I want to descend into the prisons of the purging souls to release them all. And you know from all of her prayers, she wants everybody saved, which is correct. She wants to release them all. And she wants to do it in the light of the eternal will and bring them to the celestial fatherland. That's okay. At that moment, my sweet Jesus, moving in my interior, told me, and I'm going to list the points that he makes. This is number one. My daughter, he said, the more the souls who have passed to the next life have been submitted to my will, and the more acts that they have done in the divine will, the more paths that they have formed for themselves in order to receive suffrages from the earth. That's fine for the ones in the divine will, but what about so many others? So, the more they have done my will, forming for themselves the ways of communication of the goods, which are present in the church, and which belong to me, he reminds us, there is no path formed by them which does not bring to some a relief, some a prayer, some a diminution of pains. So if they've done the divine will in some way, and to whatever extent they have done it, then their ability to benefit is much greater. The suffragans move within these royal paths of my will to bring to each one the merit, the fruit, and the capital which one has formed for oneself in my will. Notice they have to have done a bit of work on the earth. Number two, therefore, without the divine will, this is number two, there are no paths and no means in order to receive the suffrages. That's a bit scary, isn't it? Even though the suffrages and everything that the church does always descend into purgatory, they do arrive. They go, however, to those who have formed the paths for themselves. Go to those who can benefit. Number three, for the others who have not done my will, the paths are closed if they don't exist at all. And if these were saved, it's because at least at some the point of death, they have recognized the supreme dominion of my will and they've adored it and have submitted themselves to it. Otherwise, he said, they couldn't be saved. It was this last act that rescued them. Look how we must pray for the dying. Otherwise, they could not be saved. This is very serious stuff. Someone who has never done any act in the divine will, has never submitted to the divine will in their lives, you have it here in plain language, cannot be saved. So number four, for one who has always done my will, there are no paths to purgatory. Now, we've had that many times in these writings, that for people living in the divine will, there's no purgatory. His path goes straight to heaven. And one who has recognized my will and has submitted to it, but not in everything and always, this is number five, but in great part has formed for himself so many paths and received so much that he goes through purgatory quickly. So there's different types of people there and different ways of receiving. It's a little bit scary. So in the next paragraph, then we come to the living, come to ourselves, and the value of our prayers. What value do they have? Now, we have seen in the last message that when we join our prayers in the divine will, our Blessed Mother's prayers in the divine will, that they have absolutely immense value. So let's come to this now. Just as the purging souls had to form the paths in order to be able to receive suffrages, in the same way, the living, in order to send suffrages, must do my will in order to form the path so as to make the suffrages ascend to purgatory. So notice that he's saying that some automatic stuff that you might do on the 2nd of November isn't it. There's nothing automatic. That you have to be doing the divine will and you have to be operating in the divine will for that to have a benefit for the souls in purgatory. So number two, if they make the suffrages, but they are far away from my will, since the communication with my will is missing, which alone unites and binds everyone, their suffrages will not find the way in order to ascend, the feet to be able to walk, the strength in order to give relief. They will be suffrages without life, because the true life of my will is missing, which alone has the power of giving life to all goods. That means that you could go through the motions, as we say, and has no effect on you or anybody else, because the one thing that's absolutely essential is missing, and that is union with God. Now, the next line is extremely important. The more the soul possesses my will, the more value her prayers. The more the soul possesses my will, the more value her works. The more she possesses the divine will, the more value her pains, etc. So the more deeply we are committed to the divine will, then the value goes greater and greater. So you can imagine Louisa living completely committed to the divine will and putting her very, very valuable prayers in with our Blessed Mother. It had absolutely incredible value in the eyes of God. So the more we are committed to the divine will, the more value everything we do, prayers, works, pains, everything. And so she can bring a relief to the blessed souls. I measure and give value to everything, Jesus said, that the soul can do. But I do it according to how much of my will that she possesses. If my will runs in all of her acts, the measure I take is immense. Even more, I never stop measuring. And I put so much value into it that the weight cannot be calculated. On the other hand, if one does not care much about my will, the measure is scarce and the value is of little importance. In other words, it'll have no effect on anybody in purgatory. And if one doesn't care at all, of course, as much as the soul may do, I have nothing to measure, nor any value to give. Therefore, if they've no value, how can they bring relief to the souls in purgatory, who will recognize nothing, nor can they receive anything? They can only receive what my eternal fiat produces, because everyone, once they pass over into the next life, they pass over into the eternal will of God. So that's a very sobering piece to give us for November. So in the final paragraph of this message, then, living in the divine will is the greatest power. But do you know who can bring all reliefs, the light that purifies, the love that transforms, one who possesses the life of my will. So to give the souls in purgatory all the relief that they really need, you need to be living in the divine will. That's why we have this wonderful prayer that Louisa prayed for one of her priest directors. And he said it made an immense difference to him in purgatory. This soul doesn't even have need of paths, because by possessing my will, she has the right to all paths. She can go to all points because she possesses within herself the royal path of my will in order to go into that deep prison and bring relief and liberation. More so, since in creating man, we gave him our will as his special inheritance, and we recognize everything he has done within the boundaries of our inheritance with which we endowed him. But anything outside of that is not recognized by us. It's not our thing, nor can we allow anything like that to enter into heaven. That's Hebrews 12:14. Nothing unholy or unworthy can enter the presence of God. And what Jesus is saying is, it doesn't matter what you say or do, if it's outside of the divine will, it's not recognized by heaven. It's a good way of clearing our heads, isn't it? If it's not our thing, he says, we can't allow it. That's as simple as that. Since creation came out of our divine fiat, our will, jealous, allows no act to enter the celestial fatherland which has not passed through its fiat itself. Oh, if all knew what will of God actually means, and how all works, even those which appear to be good, but empty of divine will, are works empty of light, empty of value, empty of life. And works without light, without value, and without life do not enter heaven. That's about as clear as you can get. Let's go on to November 4th, 1926. And again, we come back to our Blessed Mother, and we have a wonderful thing, that she is the most faithful copy of her Creator. This is beautiful stuff. We have the first daughter of the divine will in the first paragraph, second daughter of the divine will in the second paragraph, and then we have us, the children of the divine will. So Louisa said, I was in my continuous state of the supreme will, praying our Queen Mother to help me to impetrate this kingdom of the eternal fiat. Now that's her putting all her intercessions into those of the Blessed Mother. And my sweet Jesus, moving in my interior, told me, my daughter, the most perfect copy of the children of the kingdom of my will was my own celestial mother. I think the word copy there can't be right, because she's the model. She's the first. She can't be a copy. She can be a copy of what God has done. You see it further down, that she's a faithful copy of her Creator. You can have that all right. But she's not a copy. She's the original. She's the perfect image. No, she's more than an image. She's the perfect example of the children of the kingdom of my will. Okay. So the divine will had its first daughter, and then redemption came. Otherwise, had we not had our first daughter of our will, I, the eternal word, would never have descended from heaven. We've had that many, many times. In order to descend upon earth, I would never have made use of nor trusted children who were outside of our will. Big word extraneous is there. So you see, a daughter of our will was needed for the coming of the kingdom of redemption, because she was the daughter of the kingdom of the eternal fiat, and she was the faithful copy of her Creator. Now, you see that she can't be a copy of the children. The children have to be a copy of her. But she's the faithful copy of her Creator. She is the perfect copy of all creation. What the poet said, our tainted nature's solitary boast. I don't think they can call her a copy of creation either. She's the model. She was to enclose all the acts of the supreme will exercises in all of created things. She was to enclose them all, which she did. In these writings, he asks Louisa to do the same. And because she had supremacy and sovereignty over all creation, that's the first place. That was the position given to man before the fall. She was to enclose within herself the heavens, the stars, the sun, and everything, so that the copy of the heavens, the sun and the stars and all the rest would be inside of her. Notice the translator is using the word copy for absolutely everything. And it's very confusing, because the word copy is being used in different ways. I notice that in this translation with other words as well. The word virtue, they do the same thing. They use it in many different ways. So our Blessed Mother was the model for all the children, and she was to mirror the whole of creation, which was outside of her, inside of her. And therefore, exactly what God intended in a human being was seen in her. So looking at my mother, one could see in her portents never seen before. One could see heavens, one could see the most refulgent sun, that is a source of light. One could see the crystal clear sea in which we reflected ourselves in order to see our daughter. One could see earth in springtime, always flowery, which attracted the celestial maker to make his strolls in it. You remember Genesis 3:8, that God strolled or walked with Adam in the cool of the day because Adam was in total union with God. In other words, this very awkward translation is saying that our Blessed Mother experienced paradise, because paradise is total union with God, the divine will actually reigning inside of a person, and that person actually is everything God intended them to be. This is paradise. She has a paradise in her interior. It wasn't paradise outside because everybody else was mostly living in their own will. Oh, how beautiful was the celestial sovereign. We saw in her not only our copy, but all of our works enclosed in her, and this because she enclosed our will in herself. So now we go to the second daughter of the supreme will. Now, for the coming of the kingdom of the supreme fiat, the second daughter of our will was needed, because if she was not the daughter of the divine will, our will would not entrust to her its secrets, sorrows, knowledge, prodigies, sanctity, dominion, or anything else. So notice you have to be somebody actually possessing the divine will. And that's why in the early volumes of these writings, you see Louisa making a journey towards this possession of the divine will. Just as a father and a mother enjoy making their goods known to their children and making their children possess them, even more, they would like to possess more in order to make their children rich and happy. So does my will enjoy making its goods known to its children. They're the children of the divine will. To make them rich and happy, of course, this is all spiritual. There's nothing material or physical. And this is a happiness without end. It's perennial. It'll last forever. In the kingdom of the supreme fiat, we will have the copies of the sovereign queen. Now you're talking about copy correctly, because we, the children of the divine will, have to be copies of the mother. That is not unnatural. You see it in human families as well, that the children are very like their parents. So she too longs for and awaits this divine kingdom on the earth in order to have her copies, which are her children. That means we would be like her. What a beautiful kingdom it will be, a kingdom of light, infinite riches, a kingdom of perfect sanctity and of dominion. That's what's described in Revelation 21 and 22, which there is called the New Jerusalem, and we call it the new era of divine holiness. Our children of this kingdom will all be kings and queens. They will all be members of the divine and royal family. And they will all enclose all of creation within themselves. You see, if they're going to be like the mother, then creation outside has to be mirrored inside. So they will have the resemblance, the physiognomy, that means the likeness of our celestial father. And therefore, there will be our fulfillment and the glory and the crown of our head. In other words, they will be like God. So I want to give you 1 John 3:2. 1 John 3:2 says, we will be like him when we see him as he really is. And I want to give you Psalm 8:5. He's made us little less than a God. With glory and honor he has crowned us and given us power over the works of his hands. So I'm going to have to go on a little bit tonight to finish this message. There's three major paragraphs here. Louisa breaks off then and goes back into meditation. And I'm fascinated by the fact that with all the instruction she has received, she can make a mistake that she's made before. Let's see, what mistake does she make? Then she said, I remained thinking at what Jesus had told me, and I thought to myself, before she knew that she was to be the mother of the Word, my mother had no pain or sorrow. See why I'm saying that she's not remembering what she's been told before? More so, since by living within the expanses of the Supreme Will, she was happy. Now, Louisa ought to know you can be happy and still be in pain, because happy means that you are actually in union with God. Therefore, among the many seas that she possessed, she lacked the sea of pains. Now, you know how fast Jesus is going to correct this one. Yet without this sea of sorrow, she managed to impetrate for the longed for Redeemer. Now, as you know, Louisa has been suffering incredibly, and we've seen that in all of the volumes. Jesus resumed his teaching. Now, it says speaking, it should be teaching, because he's trying to teach her. My daughter, he said, even before knowing that she was to be my mother, my dear mother had her sea of sorrow. And this sea was the pain because of the offences given to our Creator. Her blessed mother had the possession of the divine will from the first instant of her life. And you know from the book on our blessed mother in the divine will and other things that Louisa has told us in different volumes, that she suffered incredibly right from the very beginning, seeing that the human race was in rebellion against God, the God whom she loved with her whole being. So she had her suffering, but Louisa has just forgotten it. She had this sea of pain because of the offences given to our Creator. Oh, how she grieved. And then this pain of hers was animated by a divine will, and Louisa has learned this to her cost in these higher volumes, that a grief animated by a divine will becomes a divine pain. Louisa has discovered that herself, and we've seen that in volumes 18, 19, and 20. So it was animated by a divine will which she possessed, and which contains the power of a font, that means the source. So it was the power of changing everything that is done in it. The littlest things, even drops of water, become an unending sea. In other words, once the divine will is involved, it's going to become immense and great. So he's trying to explain to her again, he has explained this several times before, that anything done in the divine will is magnified to a divine level. My will does not know how to do small things, he said. They're all great. And this is so true that it was not enough for us to open our mouth and say fiat in order to extend the heaven whose boundaries cannot be seen. One fiat to form the sun that fills the whole earth with light and many other things. This says in clear notes that if my will operates or invests even an atom, even a little act, that atom and that little act becomes a sea. He's very patient in teaching her. And if the divine will bends down to do small things, it takes them up with its regenerative power, that is, its resurrection power, its ability to absolutely renew and transform. That's what he does with our little acts in the divine will, the regenerative power, making them into such a great number that man cannot arrive at counting them all. They are increased to infinity. So who can arrive at counting how many fish and how many species of fish are in the sea, how many birds, how many plants fill the earth? Therefore, the little I love you in my will becomes a sea of love. The little prayer turns into a sea of prayer. The little I adore you turns you into a sea of adoration. The divine will does all of this. The little pains become a sea of pain. And if the soul repeats her I love you, her adoration, her prayers in my volition, and suffers in the divine will, my will rises. It forms gigantic waves of love and prayers and pains, which go to unload themselves into the unending sea of the Eternal One in such a way as to place the love of God and that of the creature in common, because what the creature has just done has been raised to a divine level, because there's only one will in both of them. Therefore, one who lets herself be dominated by my will possesses as many sees for as many acts that she has done in the divine will. I presume you have no idea how many acts you've done in the divine will. So you have no idea of the immense power that God has transformed them into to bring other souls whom we might never see in our lifetime. He does something incredible with our tiny little drop of water. I think this is a wonderful teaching here. So while it seems that she does little, she actually does a lot. And she does a lot simply because the divine will gets involved and transforms it. She has a divine volition which delights in making of the little act of the creature a sea. And only with these seas can she impetrate the longed for kingdom of the divine fiat. In other words, it has to be at a divine level for it to have any clout in heaven. This is why our newborn, the little daughter of my will, was needed, so that turning her little pains, now notice Louisa has been through terrible agony, they are here called her little pains. So I presume that the stuff that we have to suffer are also called their little pains. Her I love you, everything she does are turned into seas that communicate with the sea of the Eternal One, and she has the ascendancy to impetrate the kingdom of my will. I think that from the mistake she made, what the Lord actually did with it is just absolutely brilliant. And you should go over that very slowly and come to grips with the fact that something tiny that I do, once it's done in the divine will, it becomes divine. It's fantastic. So in the next paragraph, the divine will is hidden in creation, and God has made us to be the speaking creation to speak up for them all. After this, Louisa said, I was thinking to myself, when my sweet Jesus speaks about his will, he always touches on creation for the most part. Why is that? And Jesus, moving again, told me, my daughter, one who must live in the kingdom of the supreme fiat must have as her beginning, her origin, everything that my will has done and is doing for love of her. In other words, you begin with creation. Everything that he has done and is doing. And then you go from there to redemption, everything he has done and is doing. So my will is not love because it's not known. Creation is the speaking life of my will. In other words, if you want to know what God has said to us, just look at what he has done in creation. In all created things, my will is hidden, like a noble queen who, in order to go out, wants to be known. Knowledge will tear the veil that hides it. You see, he keeps on underlining the fact that only by knowledge and understanding we can get anywhere with this. So as to go out and reign in the midst of its children. And who can make known what my will does for love of creatures better than creation, which is looked at and is touched by everyone, that is, with faith or without faith, with a right religion or a wrong religion or no religion. Everybody looks at it, so that has to be the starting point. My daughter, look at the passionate love of this noble queen, that is the divine will. She reaches the point of veiling herself with earth in order to render it firm, so that man may walk safely upon it. And as he walks over the veil of the earth which hides her, that's the divine will, she takes the soles of his feet in her noble and royal little hands so that the man may not stagger. I think that's an absolutely hilarious description of the power of gravity holding us onto the earth. And while holding through Mother Earth the souls of man tightly in her noble breast, she would want to go out unveiling herself. In other words, she'd really like you to know who she is. She'd like to unveil herself from the veil of the earth that covers her, but man walks over her without even paying attention to who is sustaining his step. Now, I read that a little bit quickly for you. What he's saying here is, in the redemption, the body of Jesus rose from the dead. It was then we realized who he was. And he's saying here that the divine will wants to unveil itself in creation and therefore rise from the dead. As far as the world is concerned, they don't even believe God exists. And so there is a resurrection involved. And human beings will be transformed when they realize just who it is who is taking care of them all the time. So man walks over the divine will without even paying attention to who it is that's sustaining his step, or who maintains the great mass of the earth firmly for him so that he may not stagger. And the noble queen continues to remain veiled on the earth, but with unspeakable patience, which only a divine will can possess. Look what we do to God. We make him prove he has infinite patience. It waits to be recognized in order to be loved, and to narrate her long story, what she has done, her love of man veiled in the earth. So at some point, what God has done, is doing, and will do for us through the earth itself will be revealed. And her love is so great that many times she feels the necessity to tear that veil of the earth that covers her, and making use of her dominion, she shakes the earth. There you have your earthquakes. She shakes them with her empire, and she hides cities and peoples in her bosom, so that man may know that inside the earth, under his feet, there is a will that is ruling and dominating, which loves and is not loved, and which, sorrowful, shapes itself to make itself known, in other words, to wake us up. When you consider all the volcanoes that are blowing at the moment and all the earthquakes around the place, that divine will in the earth is actually quite angry. In the Gospel, one can read with wonder of when, prostrated at the feet of my apostles, I washed their feet, that's John 13. And I did not skip even the perfidious Judas, that means the one who wouldn't repent. This act, which the church remembers, was certainly very humble and of unspeakable tenderness. But I did it only once. But my will descends even lower than that, and it places itself under their feet in a continuous act in order to sustain them, to render the earth firm so that it may not fall into the abyss. So we need to even look at the power of gravity as a sign of the divine will present to us. And yet he said, it gets no attention. This noble queen is waiting with invincible patience, veiled for so many centuries in all created things, for her will to be known. And when it becomes known, she will tear the many veils that hide her, and will make known what she has done for so many centuries for love of man. She will say unheard of things. She will say excesses of love, which no one has even thought of. And that is why, in speaking to you about my will, I often speak about creation. So you can hear that humanity is grieving God all the time. And St. Paul tells us in Ephesians not to grieve the Holy Spirit. But you can see just from this one paragraph that we're grieving God all the time, just not acknowledging his presence. Now, if you have somebody living in the same house as you, and that person is absolutely not acknowledged as existing, it would be the same as killing them. And so it's a resurrection for that person to be acknowledged by the others. And so it's the resurrection of the divine will that we're going to see in the new era. He says, because my will is the life of all created things, and through them it gives life to all souls and to all creatures. And this life wants to be known. Okay. So finally, he says in the last paragraph, everywhere my will is veiled. It's veiled in the wind. And from within its veils, it brings man its refrigerating freshness. I love that expression. Fragrant coolness in the heat, we say about the Holy Spirit. As though caressing him with its regenerative breath in order to regenerate and continuously to new life of ever-growing grace. But the noble queen veiled in the wind feels her caresses being rejected into the offences, her freshness and ardours into human passions, and her regenerative breath being requited with a deadly breath against grace. So she shakes her veils, and the wind turns into fury. There's the hurricanes. And with its might, it sweeps away peoples and cities and regions as if they were feathers, making known the power that this noble queen has hidden in the wind. There's not one created thing in which my will is not veiled, and therefore all of them are waiting for the divine will for it to become known and for the coming of the kingdom of the supreme will in its full triumph. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful meditation for you. And when you look at what's going on in the earth today, realize that the divine will is crying out to the human race, please, please acknowledge me. Please, please give me room to live. Allow me to resurrect, and allow me to resurrect you from death to life as well. Thank you for listening. God bless you.